And that meant things like just giving without expectation. I started going into groups and just answering questions and truly answering, not asking for anything, just helping people, giving away all kinds of value. And a funny thing happened. When I did that, guess what? People started to become like, I mean, I became magnetic and people couldn't stay away.
Welcome to the High Performance Legal Entrepreneur Series. My name is Adam Arkfeld, an entrepreneur, marketer, and seeker of high-performing habits, tips, and strategies. Each week, I'll bring to you an elite performer, a legal expert, or simply a strategy to help you see and follow the path to personal greatness in your firm and life. Thank you for joining us today. Now let's get started. Welcome, everyone, to the High Performance Legal Entrepreneur Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Arkfeld, president and founder of Prevail Legal Marketing. And today, I have Bobby Klink joining me. He's the founder of BobbyKlink.com, and which includes the Badass Online Marketing University, which is a completely free resource, 7 courses. But Bobby is a master of all things marketing, and so today we're going to talk about marketing and a couple areas that you probably wouldn't expect us to talk about, since I'm a digital marketing guy. So, Bobby, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. And we should mention I'm a lawyer by training, so. I was originally a lawyer and I still have legal stuff that I sell, but I no longer practice law. Now I've leaned more into the business coaching and marketing side of things.
Yeah. I want to hear about that transition. Tell me about going from, and it's Harvard Law School, right? Yep. Harvard Law to marketing business owner.
So, I mean, look, I was a, I don't want to say I was a normal lawyer, but I was went the traditional path for a long time. So I graduated law school in 2002. I had really great opportunities early on. I clerked for a federal court of appeals judge in Arkansas. Then I worked at prestigious firms here in Washington, D.C. One of them, I like to say that my mentor was this guy at the time I called Neil. Now we have to call him Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch. So, I mean, that kind of gives you a sense of like the legal community that I was in. And I did that. Then I was a federal prosecutor for a while. And I came out of that and joined a small entrepreneurial law firm, but I was still just a lawyer. And I did that for another 7 years, the last 3 of which was my own firm, Klink LLC. And the problem was, what I figured out at some point was, I love the law and I love legal questions. I love legal issues. But the problem was I picked being a litigator, and that is like the worst thing for my personality because it meant I spent all my time fighting with people all day, every day. And I just didn't like doing it. And a life coach asked me the question in early 2017, if I liked what I did for a living. And I, for the first time, I stammered and admitted I didn't. And she said, okay, what are we gonna do about that? And so that was the start of a journey away from the practice of law. And my law firm stayed open through 2019. I guess I had one case that there was a status conference or two last year in 2020. But basically in 2019, we wrapped up in earnest, the end of my law firm. And I've been a digital marketer full-time since, but I really got my footing as an online marketer in 2018 after 2017 was a dreadful year. I was down about 50 grand trying to build an online business. And I started online selling legal templates, basically kind of LegalZoom, but for a very particular type of entrepreneur online. And then, what happened was I got successful and people started asking me, well, how is it that you managed to connect with people online that you've never met and they feel like your friend? And so people kept asking me that. And so I said, well, you know, if people keep asking you a question, maybe it's a sign you should start teaching them how to do it. So I launched in 2019 a membership site that lasted a couple of years and then I shut it down. And then since then, I've just been doing business coaching and helping people in the space. And I still kind of bring my federal prosecutor's hat when I'm looking at problems in the online marketing space. And I kind of call things out that sometimes people don't like me calling out, but I do it because I can't help myself.
Nice. Well, I want to hear about, so you were practicing law, and that's just like such a massive change to go from practicing a lot of marketing, but also just really hard to acknowledge that you're not happy in what you're doing. So you had a life coach that asked you the question, you answered, I'm not entirely excited about my business. What was the, so maybe someone's listening right now and they're feeling that way. They're a lawyer. I talk to a lot of people in the legal industry and a lot of them are former lawyers. They call, yeah. Some of them call themselves recovering, you know, attorneys.
Yeah.
What advice would you give someone that's maybe in that space that might start heading down this road?
Well, again, you have to figure it out. And my biggest concern was a fear of like, what are people going to say? I mean, again, I would have to do the math, but probably $250,000 on Harvard Law School and all the other stuff associated with it. I had spent the better part of, at that point, 15 years practicing law. And I mean, I was pretty good at it. In my own law firm, it was me and at the peak, one associate, and we were doing patent litigation cases against the likes of some of the biggest firms in the country. And I like to say that we won more than we lost. So I was good at it. And so it was kind of tough, right? I mean, you have that going, and the idea of having to go talk to my parents, who are very traditional, don't understand the non-traditional path, and say, yeah, I'm going to stop doing this legal practice. And my dad still says, he tells his friends, he does something on the internet. I don't really know what it is. That's about all he can tell people, which is funny because my dad's a business guy, not a lawyer. And he didn't love me becoming a lawyer in the first place. But at some point, I realized that my happiness was worth more than worrying about what other people would think. And I mean, I'd had this discussion with my wife. My wife knew that I wasn't really happy practicing law. And some of it was, I wasn't really happy with it generally. And then that year just happened to be a real beat down. Like my parents wanted to pay for the whole family to go on a vacation, to go skiing and go on a ski trip in Colorado in March. Well, I had a big trial scheduled in April. I'd say, sorry, can't go. And as I'm sure your listeners know, I mean, the trial settled. I knew it probably would, but I still couldn't plan on a vacation a month before trial. And so that happened. A similar thing happened later that fall. Again, my parents were like, we'll pay for everybody. You, your wife, your daughter, everybody, we'll go and go out to the wine country. Same thing. I had a trial scheduled the next month. And I said, I can't. Again, the case scheduled or case settled. That one at least settled after the trip would have been. So I felt a little bit better. And in that time period, I had to go out of town and miss my daughter's like pre-K graduation, which I always thought that stuff was dumb until it was my daughter, right? And then you want to be there. And I was going to have to miss my daughter's first day of kindergarten. Again, I'm like, this is not the life I want. And at some point, I had to be willing to admit that and to kind of take a risky road. And I'd kind of done a little bit of that when I had gone with this small entrepreneurial firm, because coming out of being a prosecutor, I could have gone back to the high, kind of the really high prestige firms here in DC. And I mean, I would have been making $500,000 to $1 million and you know, could have lived that life, but I didn't want that. And so I'd already kind of veered off. So I made it a little bit easier, but I had to be willing basically to look inside and know that at some level, richness comes not just from the money you make, but from enjoying your life. And I definitely took a step back. There's no doubt about it. I mean, I made way less for a while than I would have. But now, I mean, I know my wife would say she doesn't care because I'm happier and I'm here. I'm here when my daughter goes to school. I'm here when my daughter gets home from school. Now, I'm not always, you know, with her, but I'm here. And so that to me was a more important thing than anything else. And so, I mean, I think that's what you got to figure out is what is the most important thing for you? And if it's not practicing law, if there's something else, be willing to try it.
Yeah, that's great. And I can totally relate with the things with kids seem stupid until you have your own.
Right. Yeah. I mean, again, I always thought that I was like, seriously, we're doing graduation for everything now. But then again, like I was sitting in the middle of a deposition out in California. And my brother-in-law had gone, he's like texting me pictures. And I'm like, you know, I was upset. I was grumpy about it. And it was one of those things that it was this aha moment that I just didn't want that. And again, I didn't have a local practice. I had a very national practice. None of my cases were here in DC where I am. So I was flying everywhere and randomly I would have a judge issue an order and I would have to get on a plane the next day. And so, yeah, but you know, it's one of those things. You got to figure out what matters.
Yeah. So you figured out what matters. And then the sort of like the next step is kind of like the path to get there.
Yep.
And how did digital marketing surface as a path for you?
So what had happened was I had already been dabbling in digital marketing and online marketing to build my law firm. So when I started my own law firm in March of 2014, not with some grand plan, the small firm I had joined We'd made one of the classic entrepreneurial mistakes, hadn't really talked about or gotten an agreement on how I would eventually become a partner. And it was a contingency fee firm. So I had all the downside risk. I would go 6-9 months without a paycheck, but I had no guaranteed upside. And so what had happened was I basically, when my wife got pregnant, I said, "Hey guys, we kind of need to talk about this," and we couldn't resolve it. And so I went out on my own and started my firm, not because I wanted to, but just because things came to a head. And so I had more time than money. Or sorry, more time than clients, I should say. And so I started kind of trying to figure things out. And I'll be honest, I started by looking at books on lawyer marketing, and they didn't make sense to me. So I threw them out. And then I just started dabbling in online marketing. And I fell into this world. I joined HubSpot, if people haven't heard of it. It's a company that helps you do digital marketing in a lot of different ways. It's built for bigger companies than kind of solopreneurs, but they have a free academy. And I just started devouring all of that stuff and learning it. And so I was using that in my law firm. In 2015, for example, I became a best-selling author, which, by the way, if you're listening and don't know what that means, if you write a book about patent litigation, it means you sell 25 books in a week and you become an Amazon bestseller. But I did that and could say, I mean, I think I still have a screenshot of it somewhere where I'm the number one bestseller in Amazon. And I did all that stuff. And so I kind of knew about this world already. I was already listening to some of these entrepreneurial podcasts, but it was really the life coach. The life coach, she asked me the question and I said, "I don't like it." And she said, "Okay, what are we going to do about that?" And I hemmed and hawed. I didn't know. And she said, "Well, I could see you going on to podcasts and talking to entrepreneurs and talking about the legal things they need to deal with." And I said, "Huh, that's a cool idea." And so I immediately got into action and I started that way. And that's why 2017 was such a down year. I paid a company, I don't remember how much I paid them, but I paid them to book me on, say, 40 podcasts that year. And so I had that going on. And it's funny, like now I never wear anything but a t-shirt. At the time, my picture I would send in was still me in a suit in a typical lawyer pose off to the side, kind of with my head, you know, cocked and my arms crossed. And I laugh about that now because it's not who I was, but I was like, I was just in action, but I didn't even have a plan of how I was going to make money at that point. And through the summer, I came up with this idea because if you spend much time in the online marketing world, they'll say, sell an online course. That's how you're going to make your millions. And so I said, clearly this is what I'm going to do. So I go about creating an online course, spent $5,000 on this program and on the software to do it and coaching on how to use the software. I dumped, I don't know, $10,000 into Facebook ads to grow my list with a Facebook ads manager. And I do this launch and I had a webinar and I knew, because look, I'd been a trial lawyer, so I knew I could deliver and I do the webinar and I know it's great. And then I get off the webinar and I go to my sales cart system and nobody's bought. And I'm like, wait, what? What's going on here? By the time I closed the cart, one person had bought for $629. I don't even remember exactly what it was. It was called Safeguard Your Online Genius. There were some kind of templates and some training, but I don't remember what exactly. And that was the plan. And then that woman asked for a refund on day 29 of a 30-day no questions asked refund policy, having never opened the program. And so that was in some ways a blessing because I'm glad that didn't take off. And that was how 2017 ended. I spent some more money on other people and it didn't work. I was down 50 grand and I was really in the dumps and thinking, you know, maybe this isn't going to work. Maybe I got to just go back to being a lawyer. And even though I don't really want to do it, that's maybe my future. But I decided to give it one last shot. And in 2018, after having first thrown out the marketing for lawyers rule book, this time I just threw out the rule book on internet marketing that was being taught by everybody and decided to be me. And that meant things like just giving without expectation. I started going into groups and just answering questions and truly answering, not asking for anything, just helping people, giving away all kinds of value. And a funny thing happened. When I did that, guess what? People started to become like, I mean, I became magnetic and people couldn't stay away. And so then I had some good luck, some good fortune. This was 2018. For online marketers, they all know about this little thing called the GDPR, the General Data Protection Regulation in the EU, which went into effect in May of that year. So it was a good time for me. There was a lot of people interested in some of these legal things. And May was my first real month. I made a little bit of money in April, but May was my first month really making money in the online space. I had a $70,000 month. And by the end of the year, I had a $250,000 business in the online space. And it's kind of just been off to the races since then. And so that's how it worked. But it was a weird long journey. And it only worked because I had a really strong why of what I was trying to do.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that because, you know, a lot of times people, you know, they don't see all the ups and downs of the path, right? You know, you try this thing, it doesn't work. And everyone else says it's working, which is so annoying. So you see every other digital marketer, like, this is the path, you try it and it doesn't work. And then you're like, I'm a failure. And you just feel like garbage, but then you just keep going, trying something new. And an opportunity presented itself, and it sounds like you capitalized on it. So, you know, there is luck involved, but you have to capitalize on that and be in a position to capitalize on it. All the work up front was allowing you to do that. So,
yeah. And there's a couple of things there. I laughed about you talking about all the marketers saying it worked, because the reality is that's survivor's bias. The reality is that this stuff isn't working for most people, but the people who it doesn't work for, they don't talk about it, right? They don't write the books. They're not out there. It's the people who it does work for who we're hearing from. But as to like it working and being luck, some of it was luck, but I mean, some of it was also, so May was a successful month for me, and it was not just selling stuff directly about GDPR, but what happened was I signed up for an online marketing program through an affiliate. And this woman had a group, it was 1,000 entrepreneurs, online entrepreneurs who were in her, had bought through her. So she had a Facebook group for them. And I was in that group just giving. Literally, I was creating freebies about the legal stuff. And I just asked the admin, I said, hey, can I just put the PDF in here? And they're just like, no, you can't get people to sign up for your email list. I said, no, I just want to give them the PDF. They were stunned because nobody does this. But I did. And so that happened. And then this woman like reached out to me. The woman who was running the group said she was putting together a program about building systems for an online business and wanted to have lessons about the legal stuff. Would I be willing to be a guest teacher? At this point, I've sold nothing online, zero. I run downstairs to tell my wife, who's like, what, who? I don't know. I mean, she was confused. And then I run back upstairs and calmly type in a response, like, you know, trying to be, okay, be cool, Bobby, be cool. Don't act like it's, you know, don't act overly excited. And I said, yeah, I'd love to, but I'm actually currently doing a training for my community about GDPR. So, you know, we'll have to figure out when we can make it work. She then responds and says, hold up, training about the GDPR, how much are you charging? I said, no, it's free. She then had me on her podcast to talk about it. Her podcast gets, you know, probably 100,000 downloads per episode. And that podcast came out the day before a webinar when I launched my next program. And she sent people to my freebie at that point. And so my list like went from, I don't know, 800 or 900 people up to 5,000 people overnight. So again, yes, some of it's luck, but not really. It's because I was in there providing value and giving that I got the opportunity. And so, I mean, that's kind of an important part of the journey that I talk about a lot, that really what happened, and I attribute some of this to my pastor, because my pastor, December 31st, 2017 happened to be a Sunday. And I will never forget his message that Sunday was about giving, but it wasn't about giving for other people's sake. It was about how giving changes you. And so that's really what encouraged me to just make giving my word of the year for 2018. And that really was the thing that turned everything around for me. And so I've never quit. That's been my word of the year ever since.
Wow. All right. You brought this up a couple times, so I want to talk about it. I want to understand these online relationships and also talk about it in the context of other attorneys who are listening to this. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know the exact question to ask. How does it work?
You mean building a relationship or what? I mean,
yeah. I mean, you know, how do you get value out of, you know, Facebook and LinkedIn? They seem so transactional, right? Yeah. So I think that's where the problem lies or lies to me, right?
And so, that's the problem. You have to not be transactional about it. Right. So again, and it depends on what you're trying to do and what you're trying to establish. But the way I've used Facebook, and I don't really use LinkedIn, I'm on LinkedIn, but my audience doesn't tend to be as professional. So they're not on LinkedIn as much. They're more on Facebook and Instagram. And Instagram, I have not yet figured out because I don't have a lot of pretty pictures to post. But that's another story. But Facebook, what I discovered is that it can be one of the most powerful engines for building brand awareness. Because what I did when I started in the space, what would happen in 2018, not started in the space, but started to be successful. There was, say, this group of, I'll say, I don't know the number, but like five different thought leaders who talked to a common group of my audience. And I got in their groups and I just provided value. I didn't ask, I just answered questions. And it wasn't all about the law. I mean, yes, anytime there was a legal question, I would answer it. But I discovered that in the year of really trying to be all in, but also the couple of years before then, I had learned a lot about marketing. So I could provide a lot of value there too. And so I became this resource who people knew me. But the real trick was, because it was kind of like, think of it as like a Venn diagram, but all the circles are really close together. They would see me in all these groups. They thought I was everywhere. I wasn't. I just happened to be everywhere that my audience was. And so what happened was, eventually it became very clear, like, and it happens to this day, but there was a period in 2018 and 2019, if I wasn't on Facebook and I'd get back on and I would have 57 notifications. And I knew every time what that meant. It meant that someone had asked a legal question in one of these groups and a bunch of people had tagged me. And so I became the legal guy in these communities, and I didn't even have to market myself. And still to this day, that's what it works with, my legal stuff, my legal templates. This is the thing that I try to get across to other online marketers, especially. Most online marketers, as you know, think in terms of funnels and direct response marketing, where I'm going to, you know, give you an ad and then you're going to come to my thing and then that's going to happen. My premier product is $1,000. You get access to all my legal templates. And for that product, I haven't looked recently, but the last time I looked, 65% of my sales are people, no track record. They're not coming through a funnel, but I know what's happening. They've interacted with me or someone else has told them, go buy the stuff from Bobby. And I can see, like, literally a lot of it is we can find Google searches, Bobby Klink legal templates. They land on my about page, then they go and buy my stuff. And so that's how I've used it. I've used it to build brand awareness, which is one of the traditional pillars of marketing that in the online space, not a lot of people do. And so if you can find that, and this is a true of no matter what kind of marketing you do, if you can find that thing that other people aren't doing and do it, it works. And like I said, because I'm willing to just give value, people see it and it builds that awareness and that works out over the long term.
I feel like this could be really valuable for an IP lawyer, like you were before. A B2B lawyer, you know, being in any group, right? So if you're a contract attorney, a business attorney, it's almost just like choose your niche and then go hang out in that group and then answer questions that you can. And then you'll be like the, you know, the plumber company legal attorney of record for all of Facebook, right?
Exactly. And what the way it works, and again, it's tough, obviously, if you're practicing state law where there's the practice issues of, you know, unauthorized practice and all those things. But there's a lot of people, and I don't do IP law. I mean, that was actually my practice, but I don't do trademark law. I've never done that. But I know there are a certain number of trademark lawyers who do hang out in these groups. And so they do that because, of course, they can take a client from anywhere. And so it's a way for them to build it up. And I can think of a few different names of lawyers who are the trademark lawyers. When anyone asks me, I refer people to them. And the same thing happens. They're getting tagged anytime someone's asking a trademark question in these groups. So especially if you do trademark, copyright, any kind of national practice where you can represent someone anywhere, it is a no-brainer. If you can find your people online and just be in the groups and provide feedback, it will be very valuable for you. I mean, otherwise, it's about building connections, which, I mean, again, there's value in that. But to me, connecting with my potential buyers is always the most valuable use for social media engagement.
So just to recap, you're in Facebook, you're joining a bunch of groups where your target audience hangs out. You get in those groups. If you go into those groups and you start soliciting, they will kick you out in a heartbeat. Those groups are not fans of solicitation.
No, not allowed.
So you go in and you just answer every question that you can. You know, did you set aside like an hour a day, or, I mean, how much time do you really spend on this?
Well, so now, I mean, and this is a personality thing more than anything else. I would probably spend about an hour a day, but like I said, I focus, and that's the key to is focus. Don't try to go into 20 or 30 groups. You'd rather spend, especially if you only have 15 minutes, pick one or two groups and that's it. And just be in those groups, because what you really want is to become the person who everybody knows as the trademark lawyer, the copyright lawyer. In my case, it was just the legal guy for this space. And the way you do that is just being there, being ever present. And so that's what I would suggest. Now, me, I love connecting with people in that medium. I am very much a group person. So actually, today, I probably spend about 2 hours of most of my days on Facebook. But that's now because I have a team that's doing a lot of the other stuff for me. And we view that as actually some of my most valuable work is connecting with people on social media. And maybe it's not 2 hours, but it can feel like that. And I'm not one, I got to be honest, I'm not great at saying, well, I'm going to do it from 9 a.m. to 9:30. I don't do that. I tend to have it open all day.
Yeah. So you're spending real time in there building connections. And then, you know, even an attorney doing that, you know, having a team that's fulfilling on, I mean, it's business development, right? Yep. That's really what it is. Just business development. So
exactly. There's
no difference between going to a networking event in your town, you know, wherever you live, or getting on Facebook and just committing to that group. It's like you have a chamber event and you go to that every Wednesday from 11:30 to 1:30 and you're spending 2 hours there. Mm-hmm. That's no different than sitting in Facebook and doing the exact same thing.
Right. And it, to me, the way I look at it is, depending on your practice, one or the other could be more useful. But being on Facebook, the advantage is if you happen to be one of those practices where you could literally be connecting directly with your potential customers, that's where it's especially powerful, right? Because at chamber events, yes, some of it is about that. But oftentimes what you're doing is kind of building referral sources, which can obviously be hugely successful and hugely helpful. But a lot of us, I mean, I didn't go to chamber events, but here in DC, there was a lawyer's lunch. And so I would do that every month. And I don't think I ever got a case from it. I'm trying to think, I never got a case from it. I had people that I could refer out, you know, clients to, but you just have to figure out what's going to work best for you and your niche. And again, like if you are a local practice, there are going to be some actual local Facebook groups that you could potentially participate in if they're there and if you can't actually provide value.
Let me ask you about converting people into clients.
Yep.
What's the best way? You're giving, and then someone tags you, and you answer a question. Do you say, send me a personal message? How do you convert them into business?
So it depends on the rules of the group. And that's part of it is like, you have to know. And that's why, again, I always tell people definitely focus, because some groups have a very strict, do not say DM me. That if you say DM me, you'll get thrown out of the group there. And so you have to figure that out within the group. But, you know, oftentimes if you have a presence on Facebook, and I'm lucky now because my personal page is Bobby Klink, but then my business is also Bobby Klink and they're linked. So if they find either one, they're going to find their way into my world. And so I don't worry about it. I just provide feedback. And then when people say, I say, hey, you can always find me here. You know, I mean, I'm happy to connect with anybody here on Facebook. And so people know that, and then they'll friend me and we can talk to each other from there. But really it's, you just have to find a way to get them into your world. But especially if you're doing it consistently, I find it's not really a problem. People will start to find you. And one thing you do need to make sure is that if someone searches your name, it's going to come up that you're going to be one of the top Google searches for your name. I have a slight problem that there's another Bobby Klink who happens to be a football coach in Oklahoma. So I get Google alerts about football games during the high school coach. So like during football season, I get some Google alerts. But you know, you want to hopefully, if someone searches for you, it's easy. Like I said, a lot of my traffic, people search either Bobby Klink or Bobby Klink legal templates. And so because I have the positioning for search engine on that, they end up finding me. But same thing with Facebook. People will just find me and they will message my Facebook page or they'll message me individually. And I'm reachable. I make myself reachable on purpose. My page, we've now said, hey, send an email to our support email box. But my personal people will contact me and I just have conversations. And again, I think the trick is to have a heart of service. Don't try to sell people. If you try to sell people, they don't like it. What works for me is people ask me questions and you just get good at having a sense of knowing when it makes sense to suggest, well, hey, I might have a solution for you. And if you're still practicing, obviously, you know, you should get on a consult. I think you just, you know, invite them to do your free consults, especially if you do free consults. It's a great way to talk with them, connect with them. And then at that point, you're off the online world into having just a traditional conversation like you would with any potential client.
Yeah. Yeah. And this seems to most easily fit in my mind with B2B practices. B2C, it seems like it could be a little bit trickier. But
yeah, I think so.
On the, you know, kind of moving into another topic that you're really, that you speak a lot about is list building in your email list and writing compelling emails. And I think this applies to B2C and B2B. You know, there are some B2C practices like bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, I would say more like criminal defense, where it's very time sensitive. You know, you're not going to be on an email list for the next crime, for the next crime you commit. So I'm going to stay on this email list because I know in 2 years I'm going to still be committing crimes and I might need this guy.
If you're a criminal attorney who is building an email list, we might have a problem. But yeah, you're right.
You know, divorce, I mean, bankruptcy, like those are things that, you know, there's a bit of a runway potentially, you know, in a lot of different areas. So talk to me a little bit about building a list and how you use that.
So what I'll tell people is the way I've approached it, I think is would be a bit out there for most attorneys. And what I mean by that is that my emails are kind of cult favorites, but that's because they are unabashedly me. I just to give everybody background, I grew up in deep South Texas, 5 miles from the Mexican border. I played in punk rock bands before I went to Harvard Law School. So I'm not a normal lawyer. When I wore suits, I didn't really like wearing suits. And so I'm just willing to be out there and be 100% me. But what I do, so I have a podcast that comes out every week. So this has always been my emails. On Tuesdays, I send an email. And theoretically, the purpose is to say, hey, I've got a new podcast episode. But as you know, people don't normally click on a link in an email to go listen to a podcast, right? I mean, they're an Apple podcast or whatever it is, and that's what they're going to do. I use it basically as a chance to connect with people. So I tell them some kind of story from my life that has a message that relates to whatever the message is in my podcast. And this is what I'm saying. You have to figure out how much of you want to put into it. And especially if it's a firm, it's not just you at a firm, it's a little bit different. But the point of this is that this way people who like me get to like me even more. And there's little things I've talked about, different events I did when I was in debate in high school that people have responded and connected with. But the point is that then all of a sudden, I'm not that random legal guy on the internet. I'm that guy who did the exact same debate thing that they did. And so they feel a connection with me. And so again, you don't have to be over the top. I tend to be over the top, snarky, make fun of things. That's my personality. Most lawyers, you're probably not going to do that. You're going to be a little bit more, you know, pulled back. But I want you to think about adding you, and especially if there's multiple lawyers in the firm, talk about different lawyers in the firm and not always about business. Because if it's always about your business, you're not letting them into your life. Whereas if you'll just talk about, you know, hey, that, you know, you went to the barbecue event with your family, or you went to the high school football game, or whatever it happens to be for you that you're doing, that will let people feel like you're a real human being. And when I started doing this back in 2018, the second email I sent, I got a response from someone who said, I've been on your list forever. And for the first time, I feel like you're a person, not a company. And for the first time, I want to do business with you. So that was in a sense where I was like, aha, I'm trainable like Pavlov's dogs. If you tell me that something's working, I'm going to do more of it. And so I've been doing that ever since. Now, again, I would suggest to lawyers, you can't be like me, because I literally will send some really off the wall things with crazy subject lines and things like that. You're not going to go that crazy, but you just want to bring some personality so they can connect with you in your emails.
Yeah. And I saw that in action with a personal development guy out of California. The organization was called Warrior, and the guy Garrett who runs it, he's pretty out there. Very vulgar. And I don't know if you know him, that organization at all?
Yeah, Garrett White.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know him.
Yeah, so he's pretty intense. But all of his messaging is stories. And he will find a message or a meaning in anything that happens in his day. And he'll just convert it into a story. And so when he writes an email, or he does a social media post, or whatever it might be, it's always story-based. He's never just writing a message. He's always writing a story. And the story is what hooks. And I had an email list that I did for about 2.5 years. Stopped doing it. I think I got burned out on it, actually, where I did the same thing. And people did not unsubscribe. And you wrote the right email and you'd get responses back. It was like, it was literally building a relationship over email. And people got to know you. Now, I write about my kids. I would write about my running. I would write about my personal development. I would write about my business. But as a marketing owner, people, my clients do not want to hear about marketing all the time. They want to hear, they're like business owners. Like, so it's like, they're like, okay, you need to know marketing, but I don't listen to marketing podcasts. I want to listen to business podcasts. Right.
Right.
So I find that, I found that incredibly valuable, and it can be done in a professional way, and it doesn't need to be totally crazy.
Yeah. I mean, so like, just as we're recording this, I don't know when it's going to go live, but as we're recording this, this is the week that Facebook and Instagram were down for 6 hours on Monday afternoon. And so like my subject line, because Tuesday is my big email. So Tuesday I said, my subject line is, are you okay? And I'm like, I just wanted to check and make sure that you survived the great, you know, Facebook and Instagram outage. And again, it was a joke, and I was literally joking. I make a joke about it because I'm a big proponent of email lists. And so everybody, when Facebook goes down, starts sending message about that. And I actually went the other way in my email. I said, I'm actually not going to sit here and yell at you about getting a list. Cause if you're on my list, you already know, I think that's important. But that's the kind of thing I do. And I jokingly said, it was kind of weird. I could spend time with my daughter because I, you know, couldn't randomly go onto Facebook to post about stuff. So those are the things that I do. And like you said with Garrett, it's almost all story-based. I've now added a second email each week, which is a more traditional newsletter, but it's not a traditional newsletter. I do a rant of some sort. I give a tip, I give a resource, then I recap a bunch of content, because now I'm creating so much content that we wanted people to know about it. But all of it is about letting people get to know me, connect with me, understand who I am. And to be clear, it, like, there are some people who don't like it, but that's okay. I want them to know that now, rather than maybe invest in my group coaching program and then be like, whoa, man, this Bobby guy, he's kind of out there. I don't like him. I'd rather they make that decision before they give me money, so I don't have to have an uncomfortable situation after they've given me money. So yeah, that's what I do. And I've told stories about sending a picture to my wife at an event without thinking about it and her responding back, why are you sending me pictures of you with random women? You know, things like this. I mean, that's literally the kind of story I tell in my emails. And it's really just about giving people a chuckle. That's what I'm trying to do, because I figure if I can make people smile today, that's probably worthwhile.
Do you weave in? I mean, you said that the purpose is to kind of like make people smile. How do you tie it into your business? Or do you even try and tie it into your business?
No, I do. So what I do is, like I said, each email starts with what is that week's podcast episode? And I try to tease out what is some big message from the episode. And then I try to come up with a story that I can somehow turn to that. And let me give you an example. Again, it's a far out there story, but one time, this would have been in 2019, my daughter is just starting kindergarten. And I was in the middle of promoting someone else, was in the middle of about to do a launch of their product. And their product is all about having a scalable business, so you don't have to trade hours for dollars. And so that's a big thing. She was doing a webinar, and I was promoting that webinar. So I sent an email that was about getting an email from my daughter's school that just, the subject line was lice. That was telling me that there was a confirmed case of lice in her class. And I jokingly said, and only half jokingly, that after my wife said I was not going to be allowed to shave her head and burn her clothes when she got home, that I spent 4 hours going, getting to the bottom of the internet to try to figure out how we make sure no lice come into my house. And I hooked in, I said, and I can only do that because I have a business where I'm not literally trading hours for dollars. And if you find yourself in a situation where you are and you want to change that, and then I transitioned into inviting people to the webinar. So that's kind of how I do it. I find some way to hook it in. Every once in a while, I have a story that just happened that week that there's no way I can figure out how to. And I'll just say, you know, this had nothing to do with this week's content, but I just wanted to tell it. Every time I've done that, I've had people email me back and tell me how it actually does relate. So it's kind of funny. My audience now will do the work for me.
That's funny. And as you do it more, you just start seeing stories. I mean, I ran a half marathon just recently, and I haven't been running very much lately. And this half marathon was really tough. It was a lot of uphill, tons of uphill. My only goal was to not stop running. Yeah, nothing based on time, nothing based on anything else. Just don't stop running. I don't want to walk. I'm running this half marathon and I'm like, what's my Instagram or what's my LinkedIn post going to be? What's the message? Like, it just, because it was like, I was there. Like, I knew what I was trying to do. And I'm like, this is an entrepreneur's message all day. And so I drafted the entire post in my head on the run. You just like start looking for it and seeing it. And it becomes easy sometimes. Sometimes you got to search for it. It's a little bit harder.
Yeah. And the thing I always tell people is one of the things I didn't get was why other people struggled with it. I would suggest everyone who has any kind of business or anything, take the Gallup Strengths Finders test. If you haven't yet, I love it. It is a great assessment, in my view, the best, because there's like 34 strengths and you get a unique ranking of 1 to 34 of yours. And then a unique report that's kind of literally the stuff depends on where each one of them ranks. And when you read mine, it literally like talks about how I naturally connect stories from my life to my business. And I'm just sitting there. I'm like, well, yes, I do that naturally. Other people don't. So I've realized that, but it does get easier as you work on it and you practice it. And it just will become semi-natural to you. And I think you'll get there. But by the way, on the half marathon, I ran a marathon once in my life. It's been more than a decade ago. I ran the Vegas Marathon.
Oh, I've run that one.
I mean, I don't know if they did it the same way as I did it. At like mile 25, you have to go over the overpass back over the highway, which I'm like, no one should ever put that at mile 25. Because I will admit, I walked up the thing. I was even with just a mile left. I'm like, I don't have it in me to run up this this overpass at this point.
Yeah, I ran that marathon and they ran out of water. In the 20 miles, and it was they just didn't prepare for it correctly. So
at some point, I ran a half marathon in Virginia Beach, and my brother-in-law ran it with me. And I don't know why he did this, but for some reason, like it was like 80% humidity and hot. So I knew I'm stopping at every single water station, even at like mile one. I'm like, I know this. He didn't stop until mile 7 to get water. And he, of course, collapsed at the end and, you know, was not in good shape. I was like, come on, man. You got to drink water.
All right. So if there's one takeaway from this podcast, it's drink water at mile one. Yeah, not mile seven.
Yes. There you go.
All right, Bobby, thanks so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it. Where do people check you out in your podcast, in your templates and everything else?
So I mean, the easiest way is just go to my website, bobbyklink.com. And from there, you'll find everything. I have this thing that says legal stuff. That'll take you to my template shop. I think business stuff that takes you to my free university. And then there's a podcast and a blog. So you can find everything there. And you know, always feel free to connect with me. And especially look, if you're a lawyer and you're thinking you don't really like it and you'd love to pick my brain about the transition, I'm happy to chat with folks on it. I mean, I don't actually work with lawyers in it. So I'm happy to just kind of be a resource for people. And I like helping good people. And if you're a good person, I'd love to connect with you.
That's great. And it's Bobby Klink. It's K-L-I-N-C-K. You're trying to spell it out. All right. Thanks again, Bobby. And thank you all for listening. And we'll see you in the next episode.